There lies a hut in the forest. It is deep in fall and dark. No snow has fallen yet, and the leaves fall like rain from ever emptier branches. In the hut sat a boy and his sister, stranded in the forest by parents who had decided that the kids needed to get unconnected. They were bored to death. The sister, whose name was Mariam, fidgeted with her fingers, unconsciously swiping the air. Their phones were hidden so they could unconnect. Yay. Davor blew bubbles of saliva that slowly popped. Mariam repeatedly told him it was gross, so he kept doing it. There was a hustle and a bustle and a cold draft as Uncle Enya came in through the door, arms full of logs. He threw them to Mariam and to Davor, and he called to them to throw them on the fire. And they did. And they did it way too enthusiastically, so they got scolded for damaging the fireplace. They rolled their eyes at each other. "Best vacation ever," Mariam mouthed sarcastically. Davor rolled onto his back. "Uncle Enya," he asked, "what is the point of fall?" Uncle Enya scratched his head, took off his jacket, untied his boots, and waddled over the fire. He was wide as he was tall, with gray peppered into his beard. "Well, how would the leaves otherwise get down?" he asked. "You know what I mean, Uncle Enya. It's dark and it's cold, and you can't do anything without getting muddy and cold. I mean," he added, a bit louder for the benefit of his parents, "if you're not in some big city where you happen to be living otherwise, that is." His mother humphed from the kitchen. Uncle Enya pretended not to hear the sarcasm. He answered slowly. "The point of fall," he said, "is to remember things and to dream." Dario and Mariam raised eyebrows at him that were skeptical, to say the least. "When we sit here by the fire, we can dream of summer and of light," he continued. "Go fall," Mariam said. "The point of it is to dream of other seasons." Her sarcasm was so dripping it visibly dampened the fire. Once again, Uncle Enya pretended not to hear it. "Yes, things need to be dreamed about, and you need to tell others your dreams. That's how everything beautiful begins. A person who never dreams will walk down to the beach and be annoyed that everything gets sandy. But a person that dreams will see the sea, an unknown world, and be terrified." "Humph," said Mariam. Said Davor. Uncle Enya continued unperturbed. "Have I ever told you about the time I was in northern Norway and met the Gnirfta?" Mariam shook her head. "Northern Norway sounds even worse than the falling forest in the middle of Sweden. Was it so dark your eyes stopped working?" "In fact, no. I was there in summer, and the light never fully faded. I arrived at midnight, and even then the sun was hovering over the horizon." The children said nothing, regarding him with deadpan looks, as one might a brick or a slowly meandering fruit fly. Uncle Enya smiled, fixing his gaze at some far-off point behind the cabin walls. "I and your mother had gone there to work in the forest over the summer. Anyone who wanted got work there, but you had to spend all summer away from your friends, so many didn't go. I and your mother had never been to a forest before in our lives, but we really had no friends anyway in the city, and we were so tired of not having money, so we went. We were so exhausted after the train trip that we slept all the way till noon the next day. I stepped outside dazed. The light was, very light. It is hard to describe. Your mother had already woken up, and we ate our bread and olive oil, sitting on a stone and peering warily into the huge forest that surrounded us. The fire crackled, and Uncle Enya looked into it, remembering. Their mother called from the kitchen, voice curiously tense. The children don't need to hear that story, Uncle Enya. It's time to eat soon. Uncle Enya, who was a phenomenon at not hearing, continued. Well, anyway, we met nice kids of our own age there, and we felt much better about spending our summer there after that. But to jump to the story, that evening I and your mother were out for the first time in the forest, marking trees to be felled. We had gotten clear instructions of where to go. I remember there was a brook to our right that we were supposed to follow. This was in June, and as we worked, clouds gathered across the sky, muffling out the light and drabbing the colors. I remember your mother saying how forest colors were really forest colors only when the sky was cloudy. In the sun, they're much brighter. Your mother and I became absorbed in our work. Mark tree, walk 10 paces. Mark tree, walk 10 paces. Check map. Mark tree, walk 10 paces. Mark tree, walk 10 paces. Check map, not mark tree. Walk 10 paces. And without us noticing, the temperature had been dropping. A solitary snowflake whirled down in front of me. I called out to your mother and she looked up. A very sparse set of flakes were making their way down among the trees. We watched them for a while. Had we known more about the mountains, we probably would have made our way back straight right then. But we didn't. We knew nothing. We would have felt stupid going back for a few flakes. It was our first day and all. We kept working. Mark, check map, walk 10 paces, check map, walk, don't mark, mark. And without us noticing it, the snowfall became heavier and the wind started blowing. Finally, we did notice. Your mother called out to me, I think we should go back. When I looked up, the flakes were coming down so fast I kept blinking because flakes were flying towards my eyes. I made it over to your mother and we headed back towards the ditch, but we couldn't find it. According to the map, it should have been right there, and at first we were mostly upset that we must have marked all the wrong trees. We made our way back, we thought, but the barracks and the main buildings never showed up where we thought they would. Just more trees behind sheets of snow flurries that made their way in everywhere. Now remember, this was summer, so all we had to put on was our sweaters. We held hands and walked and walked. And it was summer, so it never got really dark. If you think it's strange with a snowstorm in June, remember that even as far south as Linköping, you can have snow in June. And this was far up north, above the polar circle. Norway's a very stretched out country, you know. We held hands to not lose each other and kept walking. We realized we were completely lost. But we kept going simply because it seemed worse to stand still than to move. I truly started to hate the forest. It looked the same everywhere, and the thought came to me that this was not a place humans were meant to live. And nature would not care one iota if we didn't. We walked and walked and walked and walked and walked. I remember wanting to mark some trees just in case, and your mother getting angry and worried at my nonsense. We walked. With time, we fell down a deep hole covered by twigs in the snow. It hurt, but we were too tired to be surprised. We had fallen far. Up above us, a few meters up, was a circle of light. We felt below us. There were branches, small branches, twigs, and lots of needles. Had the pile not been there, we would have surely broken something. We looked around, but saw nothing. Shivering from the cold, heat was all we really thought about. We burrowed down into the pile of needles, deep into the needles at the bottom, and fell asleep. When I opened my eyes again, the light from above wasn't as bright. We hadn't had time to get used to the rhythm of the light, but maybe it was 10 at night, maybe midnight. Our clothes were still damp and I shivered, digging deeper into the pile of needles. "Psst, Enya," your mother breathed. I looked up, unwillingly leaving the protected bubble of heat under the needles. Against the wall stood round shapes, two of them. They moved towards us. As they came into the bleak shaft of light that came down from above, we could see that they had tummies and legs as bears, but their faces looked more like a mole's, if a mole had had large black eyes and a slightly smaller nose. Of course we were scared speechless. We did realize that they were not bears, but apart from that, they could be anything. Remember, we had lived in Norway only a year, and if you had asked me then if tigers lived in Norway, I wouldn't have been sure. I couldn't tell a rose from a crocus. They came forwards carefully, and we sat still. One of them pulled at Gona's hair, and she squealed. They started back. Then one of them came up to me and scratched me on the cheek. I hadn't learned to shave yet, so there was a very uneven stubble on it. It seemed almost human the way it moved its paw over my face, exploringly. Then adding the other paw, almost like the doctor doing an inspection. It held out a paw, and after hesitating a second, I took it. It seemed to be what it wanted. The other creature took Gona's hand, and instinctually I and Gona held hands, and they led us away from the shaft of light and into the darkness. I and Gona looked at each other, but we let ourselves be led, all holding hands, downwards and into the dark. I assumed I was dreaming, so I didn't take it all too seriously. I think you would too. We were surprised to find that we could stand upright as we were led onwards and downwards. There were many twists and turns, but we were too excited and scared to remember our exhaustion from earlier. Neither Gona nor I could tell you how long we had walked or how many turns we had taken when a faint light appeared in the distance. It was driving away the darkness around the corner. And for the first time, we could dimly see where we were walking. And I noticed that the roof seemed to be lined with arches of stone. As we rounded the corner, we had to squint. Our eyes had become so accustomed to the darkness, and the room that we entered was lit with firelight from several fires, in low hearths lined with bricks. Several round shapes milling about looked up as we entered. Wooden tables were spread throughout the large room, and I smelled something that might be food rising from the fire. It didn't smell terrible. Little round shapes scurried away to their elders as we came in, and a hush fell over the room. Large black beaded eyes looked at us intently. A round fellow with gray and fur around his nose made his way slowly and seriously towards us and took one of mine and one of Gona's hands. "Welcome to Signifta," he said, in a heavily accented but completely intelligible Norwegian. "This is a strange dream," I thought. But also, I thought, the kind of dream you want to keep dreaming to see what happens. The end. Good night.